Good morning. Today is Saturday, August the 11th, and I just thought I had a lot on my mind, and I thought I would do a blog entry this morning just to try to talk about some things that have been, you know, stirring in my mind. I was reading the Word of God, and I was studying Scripture, and I keep going back to this one Scripture in Exodus 22, verse 22. And it's basically stating that you should not prey on a widow, the fatherless, the orphan, the poor. And I was just thinking in general, I know that some people might know that I had done some advocacy previously on my website under another name. I think it was Paper Pusher when I first started doing my blogs and starting to follow Jesus and kind of, you know, just kind of trying to do some searching on myself and on some things. I, you know, had a lot of resentment, I think, when I first, you know, I was baptized in April 2016, and I had been, you know, already developing a relationship, you know, with Jesus and studying the Word even a little bit prior to that. But I had some emotions that were built up against, you know, I felt that was, you know, we should be protected and our health should be protected and children should be protected from greed and from injustice. And I did a lot of running around trying to find alternatives to, you know, treating depression and just trying to find answers to some issues that I was having and that I was, you know, having a lot of trouble with in my life. And so I started an advocacy page for healthcare reform, and I was doing a lot of blogs about some issues that upon my research that I stumbled upon. And then I finally said, you know, maybe I'm getting some retaliation against doing this. I'm speaking out against, you know, a very high $1 billion profited industry. Maybe I should stop and I should cease and I should just focus on evangelizing Jesus. And so I completely tore down my website and I just made it Jesus focused. You know, let's focus on the positive. Let's not try to stand in the way of, you know, sinners and all of this. And for some reason, no matter what I can, what I try to do to get away from these feelings that I have against, you know, I feel like the failure to protect the health and safety of people because of greed. It just, no matter what I do, and I pray and I pray on it, I pray on it consistently. I talk to Jesus, relieve me of these feelings, relieve me of this. And it always continuously surfaces this burning desire of, I just feel like there's greed that is overriding the health and safety of children, even children. And, you know, I was doing some thinking about it, and I kept going back to Exodus 22, verse 22. You know, you're not supposed to prey on the widow, the fatherless, the orphans. And I keep thinking about the amount of foster children who are fed, you know, pharmaceutical medications for trauma and all of these things. And I keep thinking about, you know, how, you know, mental health impacts everything. And even though they'll quote and say, you know, it's a $1 billion industry because of all the revenue that it brings in, I think it's even worse than that, because it impacts every single area. It impacts correction systems, right? You know, as taxpayers, we have to pay to incarcerate people. And I think that when the mental health system fails, I think they often wind up in corrections. And so we have to, as taxpayers, pay for that. When we have the mental health fail, you know, we have to pay for more law officers and more law enforcement. And when mental health fails, we have bullies and kids going to school, shooting up schools because of bullying and harassment. And, you know, children should be able to go to a public school and have a safe and comfortable learning environment. And now in California, these kids are, you know, on waiting lists for independent study programs and are being led into virtual academy schools because of bullying and harassment, and because we are not giving these kids a safe and comfortable learning environment for them to learn and thrive in. And I feel like when we look at mental health, it impacts everything. So while they might say it's a billion-dollar industry, it's far more exceeds that. And, you know, the taxpayers are paying for it. You know, one of my biggest questions right now that I have is, you know, with all the economical advisors in this state, how could we not have seen that, you know, if the rents continue to raise in California to a level that is so, you know, that's just not even feasible for someone making minimum wage. You know, if you look at that and you say, see how the rental, you know, over the past, you know, what, 8 years, how the rents have increased to the point now where now if you do a Craigslist search of all the rents for one studio and you sort them by the cheapest rent possible and you go to a salary calculator, you know, online where it calculates the state and federal taxes that will go, that will be taken out of a paycheck, and you put in the California minimum wage and you get that weekly rate, and then you take out all the taxes for someone who's single and has no dependents, there it is not possible for you to work full time in the state of California on minimum wage and even afford a studio. Okay, so if you look at that alone and you realize that if you can't even afford a studio, why on earth would you want to work a full time job if you can't even afford to survive with that full-time job? You have a choice. You're going to either be led to homelessness or they're going to turn to crime. So I'm just, my question is with, you know, these, you know, well-educated economical advisors and all of that, how they couldn't have foreseen that this would be an issue, you know, if they didn't put in some kind of rent controls throughout the state of California, some kind of safeguard net. Because what I see is a bunch of elites who have a bunch of money could gather around with a group of their friends and say, hey, let's all buy, you know, properties within, you know, a couple blocks from each other, or, you know, you do one, you know, over here in this neighborhood, and I'm going to do one a couple miles away. We're going to buy the properties and we're going to flip them and we're going to sell them to one another, back to each other for higher rates. We're going to force the rental market to increase. And that's what I think happened, is they forced the rental market to increase. And the people who had to suffer are the lower classes who don't have that kind of money. And they did it and they made a killing with it. But now you have to look at the problem of, okay, so now someone who has no education, who needs to work minimum wage, can't even afford a roof, a studio in California. So they're going to either face homelessness or they're going to be forced into what? They're going to start shoplifting. They're going to commit crimes. So now we have to anticipate that not only are our communities going to get, you know, more dangerous, right? Unsafe, because people are going to be robbing cars, vandalizing stores, grocery markets. They want to cut the, you know, food stamp program to a box of vegetables and some spam in a can. Like, you don't see how this is going to impact communities and everybody around us. How, you know, the crime rate, if you get out of prison and you have, you're a convicted former felon and you can't even get a job that's going to even keep a roof over your head, how long do you think that person that gets out of incarceration is going to try to scrape by sleeping in people's houses before he or she returns to crime to survive? Now, if we look at this and we think, how did these, you know, educated financial, you know, economical advisors did not foresee this coming, and why didn't they try to protect everybody from this happening? Because, you know, you go to this grocery store, it's like $11 for a family size pack of toilet paper. For a family size pack of toilet paper, someone who's making $12 an hour on a minimum wage needs to work almost entire hour to wipe their behinds, okay? Like, that is truly alarming. And if we can't see that the crime rate's going to go up now that we have no, you know, rents available, and who's going to pay for this? The community, you know, we're going to get money together and everybody's going to get free housing. You know, I just don't see why this wasn't, you know, thought of before, and why they didn't put in some kind of control measures to safeguard, you know, the taxpayers from this. And I think it's going to be, you know, a big issue. when we look at, you know, the word of God, and it talks about warning the flock, you know, we're supposed to warn each other of deception, of any kind of, you know, injustice. We're supposed to warn one another to safeguard one another. And, you know, one thing that I would point out is, you know, I don't know all the answers. I am not a professional, you know, doctor. I am not this, that, or the other, but I do have questions, and I do want people to answer my questions. Like, I want to know. I want to know why healthcare only allows us one coverage opportunity. We cannot choose to see a naturopathic doctor who prescribes herbs and, you know, diet and exercise and all that. We can't go and pay, you know, with our coverage to see an alternative provider. We are forced into a high pharma consumption healthcare provider, where their main treatment option is the high pharma model, which means anything that generates profit for the pharmaceutical industries. You know, you don't see them covering. I was working at a place, and I talked to a man who came in who said that he had, I don't know, diabetes or something, and he went through a healthcare program. He's like, it wasn't one of the healthcare providers' programs. It was a sponsored program for him to lose weight with these intermediate fasting in these specific nutritional shakes. He said healthcare wouldn't cover it, but he had to pay like almost $1,000 out of pocket for the payments to get the weight loss nutritional shakes to lose the weight. He's like, but I feel so great. I've lost all this weight. He's like, I don't need to inject myself anymore with these medications. And it's just very alarming when they would cover, you know, someone to take injections every day for diabetes, but you won't cover someone for $900 a month to lose weight. Or, you know, it's like, it goes back to it being a high pharma consumption system. And, you know, the things that would cost taxpayers less, you know, like the FDA hasn't regulated herbs that have been treating people in different cultures for thousands of years. You haven't regulated that yet. We might be able to get by with a $20 alternative to this fancy designer pharma medication that's costing us, you know, tons more. Because it is a high pharma consumption system. They are basing it off of profit and revenue. Because if we looked at the situation, there are definite ways that we could, you know, intertwine the naturopathic doctor and the medical doctor to try to save costs on treatment plans. And you don't see that. One of my questions, you know, that really alarms me is, you know, about children. And about, you know, treating children who are completely vulnerable to the decisions that the healthcare professionals, that the politicians, that we're supposed to be protecting and safeguarding our children and our youth. And often, you know, parents of the lower class populations, they are not educated in potential conflicts of interests. They're not educated in, you know, the 1991 Prescription Drug User Fee Act, which enables the FDA to receive paid application fees from Big Pharma, which in my opinion creates a great conflict of interest, because now you have a financial conflict of interest between the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA, who is supposed to be safeguarding and protecting public health. Okay? You know, people who are in lower class populations, they're not aware of, you know, the research bias, you know, the fact that, you know, the pharmaceutical industries are conducting their own research, and sometimes negative researches aren't being published, that there is a level of danger of conflicts of interest, of corruption that could be occurring, because anytime there's money and revenue involved, there's going to be greed. And to not see that, you know, one question that I have is, everybody says, well, it's science, you know, that, you know, depression is a science, ADHD, it's a science. Well, they may very well have had some kind of an argument about, you know, a chemical imbalance in the brain. My question is, science proves something. Science You know, you go to a lab and they take a blood test. They have a scientific method to prove that through your blood, through a lab, that you're sick. Okay? Science has an x-ray machine, a CAT scan, some type of scientific technological device that proves, scientifically proves something. So tell me, please, I really want to know. And I don't know all the answers, but I have questions. And for some reason, I feel that we are supposed to protect the weak. We are supposed to protect innocent children. We are supposed to protect the elderly. We are supposed to protect the poor. We are supposed to protect those who do not have the power and the authority to protect themselves. And I want to know why, when you go into a psychiatrist's office, there is not science to prove that whatever it is they're basing off of symptoms alone, that you have, in fact, that label, that sickness. I want to know why you don't go to a psychiatrist's office, since this is all in the realm of science, and why science doesn't have, you know, a brain scan. A brain scanner that's going to look at an image of your brain and say, this shows and proves this child has ADHD. This brain scan proves and shows that you have depression. We want a picture, a scientific device that proves that you are treating this child for what you say that they have. And if you don't have that device, then it's not science. It's brilliant marketing off of symptoms of loan, okay? And it's generating billions of in profit. And I feel that, as you know, children's their healths are vulnerable. They are vulnerable to the decisions that the healthcare industry, that doctors make on their behalf, that their parents make. And a lot of parents who don't have any kind of education, they trust the integrity of these professionals to make the best decisions for their children. And if they have no education and they don't know the conflicts of interests, the potential, you know, platforms for greed and corruption, pharmaceutical incentives, you know, pharmaceutical companies pushing psychiatrists, hey, if you prescribe this new medication that we just created, you know, we're going to give you a trip to the Bahamas. We're going to give you, you know, some financial incentive, okay? If these people don't know these conflicts of interest, that there's a platform for greed, that there is, you know, a chance that their child is not truly being even diagnosed properly, then I think that there should be laws and regulations that protect these children from greed and corruption. And my question is that there is a true link to nutritional deficiencies and mental health issues. There is a true link between kids who suffer from trauma and who mimic psychiatric symptoms. So if a young boy sees his father abuse his mother and he witnesses domestic violence, that child may feel depressed for a long time after that. That child may get anxiety when he hears an adult raise their voice in a room. So please explain to me, does the trauma ignite the chemical imbalance, or is it just the result of trauma that needs a psychologist to help the child get through it? You know, I really, really want to know why there's not a scientific device to prove that a child has what they say they have. And on top of that, I want to know what laws they have to enforce that all other medical nutritional elements are ruled out by law before they even try to diagnose a child off of symptoms alone. I want to know what laws you have in place that enforce a psychiatrist to take a child and say, you need to see a dietitian, and the mother or father or parents need to write down what this child has been eating and drinking for a month and let us know. Because, you know, if a kid's eating a, you know, half a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch before they go to school. And then they go to school in the public school systems, and you got Coca-Cola machines and Otis Spunkemeyer and pizza and all this stuff. And they're eating, you know, tons of sugar, and they're hyperactive. You know, I want to know that there are laws that enforce a psychiatrist to do a dietitian review of that child on a nutritional level. I want to see a law that enforces that child see a physician and get blood lab and blood work to rule out every other possible medical ailment that could be causing this child to be depressed. I want to see a psychologist meet with this child first to ensure that the child is not suffering an aftermath of trauma-related symptoms that could be eased and healed through counseling treatments to pinpoint the trauma and the result of that trauma. I want to see legal laws that enforce all three things before you even consider basing a child off of symptoms alone and prescribing these medications. I want to see that, and I don't see that. And I really, really think that there is a level of greed in this country that is putting corporate profit above the best interest of our children. And I really also want to do some research. I want to know why I see a billboard, you know, that's geared to parents about ADHD, and, you know, your children, you know, is wiggling and you may have ADHD. I want to know why that same billboard, I want to know where you've placed, strategically marketed that same billboard. And I want to follow all marketing efforts. And I want to see what cities they're putting these billboards up about ADHD and depression. And I want to compare them to rich neighborhoods where, you know, the elite, you know, live, where they have natural food stores, whole food stores, and, you know, all of these health nutritional stores. I want to see why they're marketing in the poor neighborhoods versus the elite neighborhoods. I want to see what the marketing strategy is and who they're trying to target by such billboards and but by such marketing. I want to see science. I want to see it because I keep hearing it. It's in the name of science. If it's in the name of science and you prove through science that there's a chemical imbalance that makes people depressed, then I want to see the scientific tool in the psychiatrist's office that is going to confirm that a child has ADHD through a brain image scan. I want to see the science that is going to prove that a child has depression and it's not the product of trauma and the aftermath of trauma or a nutritional imbalance or, you know, another medical issue. I want to see the proof, the scientific proof, because science proves something. Science proves that you're sick. Science has, you know, a device, a blood test. It has a proven method to prove that you're not misdiagnosing these children based off symptoms alone. And if you're basing something off of symptoms alone, there should be tons of laws that enforce everything else is ruled out before you do that. And, you know, I really, really, you know, I want to put this down and I want to just, you know, I want to be silent about it in a way. I don't want any problems. I don't want to, you know, cause anything. But when I look at these children, you know, and I've seen it happen where, you know, side effects of medication can make children, you know, act out. I mean, if you've done, I've done research on ADHD medications and how there's lawsuits and how there's a lot of kids that get aggressive behavior on these ADHD medications and how that goes to their school, their public school system, and they act out at school. And then it goes to them being labeled and branded because now they're acting out in school and now they're looked at as a bad kid. I want to really, really look at the side effects of these medications and how it could be, you know, impacting this kid's, you know, kid's education. And why can't we, you know, safeguard them from misdiagnosis? Why can't we safeguard them with science to prove that they do in fact have what you say they have? Why can't we safeguard these kids by laws to ensure that it's not nutritional, that it's not through trauma? Why why don't we have this in place? You know, because once a child's health is impacted, you know, it's really hard to get back. Once their health is impacted, we don't know enough about these drugs to see what kind of damage they're going to have on kids who start taking them at 4 or 5 years old and then take them till they're teenagers and they're taking more than one medication. Do you truly know? I mean, when did Prozac come out? The late 70s, early 80s? Do we really truly know the impact that these medications can have when kids are taking them while they're in, you know, stages of growth? You know, do we really truly know? And if you look at the statutes of limitations, they really truly protect the system, the corporations, from any lawsuits that happen, you know, 15 years down the road. I really, really feel that it's our duty to protect the children in this country. And I really, really think that, you know, at all costs, you know, we should be standing up and we should be speaking up for these children and we should be asking these questions. No, I'm not a doctor. No, I don't. I'm not a professional. But I am a human being that's capable of asking questions. And I ask you these questions. What laws do you have to ensure that a child, all other medical and nutritional ailments are ruled out before you diagnose a child off of symptoms alone? What protections and legal regulations do you require that a psychiatrist goes through before prescribing medications to a child and a minor? I also want to know, you know, I think that there is a TED Talk on, it's a TED Talk, and it's a man who did like 86,000 brain scans. He was a man, and he said he wasn't very well liked by some people in the medical community because he said with a brain scan imaging, you could prove a person had some kind of an imbalance in their brain. You could prove with brain imaging, you know, you could go away from diagnosing somebody off of symptoms alone and you could scientifically prove it. So my question is, if you can scientifically prove, you know, psychiatric illnesses, right? If you can prove them and market that it's behind the name of science, then my question is, if it's behind the name of science, why don't you have a brain imaging scanner in a psychiatrist's office to prove that a person has what you say they have, to prove it? Because it's in science, so science should be able to show it and prove it. And I think that with children, we need to protect them from greed. I'm not saying the whole system is greedy. I'm saying that we can at least see that there are enough conflicts of interests, okay? We can agree collectively that there are at least enough conflicts of interest that do allow a platform for potential greed, for potential corruption, for potential, you know, negative research not being published, the conflict of interest, you know, around, you know, the Prescription User Fee Act, the conflict of interest of psychiatrists receiving pharmaceutical incentives or vacations or retreats. We could also see, you know, the conflict of interest of not having legal protections to safeguard and to rule out all nutritional and all other possible elements that a child might have that should be enforced before even considering diagnosing them off symptoms alone. So I just wanted to say that has been going through my mind because I really want to simmer it down and I just want to close the door on my feelings about this whole situation, but I can't. I just can't because I see these children, I see orphans. If we look at the number of foster kids who are ingesting these medications, if you look at that number, if you look at, you know, the correctional system, if you look at all of these things, I really, really feel like mental health impacts everything. And as taxpayers, it impacts the correctional system. It impacts our public schools. It impacts, you know, it impacts everything. And I really, truly feel like we're getting away to where health insurance is becoming so expensive that, you know, people almost have to, especially in the lower classes, they almost have to give up prevention, you know, like health food and everything's genetically modified these days and processed, that they're giving up prevention in order just to have health care. You know, it's just, I really, really just feel like as a nation, we really need to get past greed. We need to confront greed, and we need to just all come into agreement that there is a barrier of greed that is infecting this nation, and that we need to come back to what's truly important. And what's truly important is our youth, is the future of this country. And we really, really need to protect those who are powerless, who cannot protect themselves. And we need to start to say something, and we need to start to ask those questions. And I don't care if I'm wrong. I don't care if someone's going to come back with a list of laws and protection. Great. I would love to know that you are really truly doing your due diligence to protect the children in this country. I really want to know that. But right now I really want the science to prove it. I want the sign. You're naming all of these symptoms, you're naming all of these labels, you're naming all of these sicknesses, and you're making people believe that it's science. So what I want to know is if it is in the name of science, why you don't have science proving a proper diagnosis every single time. I just wanted to say that, I thank you for listening.